Hi, how are you? How you doing? I was poked today by 5 people. I don't know what that means. To me, poking is when someone takes their finger and shoves it into your body somewhere in a hurtful manner. That's poking. Poking fun at somebody. I get that. But I went to one of my Facebook pages today, one of the many Facebook pages that I have, and 5 people poked me. I didn't feel anything, and I don't understand what they did. I went to their Facebook pages to see what this is all about, and I couldn't see anything that was of any poking interest to me. I've heard of Pokemon, but I don't know what being poked is. People are poking me, and I'm not sure. I don't know what they're doing to me. I don't like to be poked, by the way. I was poked in junior high school. Some kid sitting next to me used to poke me all the time in the ribs. And I felt like poking his face. But I'm not a violent person, and I never did. I had poke marks after a while in junior high school. Didn't enjoy being poked. That was when I started growing, and I became 6'3" in junior high school. People stopped poking me for fear that I would do worse to them. So it's cool. It was good. But I don't get the poking on Facebook. I don't quite understand what that means. I know there was a James Polk, spelled differently. James Polk was the 11th president of the United States. That's where we live. And he was a Democrat. He only lived for like 50 years or something, just over 50 years. He died in office. How does that happen? Don't you have like a good medical team or something? How did that happen? Where's President Polk? Oh, he's in his office. Well, let's see what he's doing. Oh my God, he's dead. I mean, how does this happen? Where's Dr. Smith? No, he went out for a sandwich. Look what happens when you go out for a sandwich. You come back to the Oval Office and the president's dead. I don't even know if he had an Oval Office. I have no idea. This was way back like in 1840s, the mid-1840s. I don't remember that. It wasn't really around then. I think that's before they had cell phones even. President Polk died in 1849. In office as he was president. Somebody must have really poked him hard. So I don't like to be poked, but I was poked. Someday I'll find out what that means. You'll probably tell me, and I probably won't understand what the hell you're talking about.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
I'm poking you. Can you feel it? I'm poking you right now. Hey, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good night. I'm all out of sequence here. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. This is what happens when you get poked.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours.
Thank you.
And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. Please save your applause to the end of the program. It screws me up when you do that right in the middle. I can't take the adulation. Hey, welcome to the program. I'm James Polk. James Polk, man. The Polkster. The Polkster. Died in office. Where's James? I don't know. Let's go check on him. Shouldn't you have people with you at all times when you're the president? Unless you're meeting with Russian dignitaries, then, of course, that would be alone. Well, anyway, welcome to the show. Hope you're feeling all right. There are a lot of things that I don't understand. I don't understand poking, and I don't understand Pokemon. I think all my misunderstandings come from the word poke, to be honest with you. I know today if somebody poked me, I'd smack him, because that's an act of aggression. Anyway, how you doing? Later on in the program, we're going to talk to a recycling expert about recycling in this country, how we cycle and then we cycle again. I guess if you have a bicycle and you ride your bicycle and then later you ride your bicycle again, you're re-bicycling or recycling. I'm a tree hugger. You can't see me right now, but I'm hugging a tree as we speak, especially the girl trees. They're especially sweet with their sap. I don't know what that meant, by the way. But I love nature. I love peace and quiet and the chirping birds. And trees don't scream, you know. When trees fall down, that you hear this minor little crackling, and then you turn around and you go, what's that minor little crackling? And then it gets into more of a crunching sound, and the tree falls down. That's how trees die. Very similar to James Polk. It's just a very natural thing. So I've always been into that stuff, and I've always recycled since I was a child. When I was born, I was recycled. I think they took my my little thing there, that embryo sac deal, placenta, placebo, platuno, Pueblo, Colorado. I think they recycled that into a pocketbook, I think is what they did. I think my mother had a pocketbook that looked like that, like my placenta. And it was fashionable for a while. Anyway, so we're going to talk about recycling later on and the importance thereof. You know, if you really, really recycle and you really think about it, your recycling would be about 95% of what you consume, what you throw away. 5% would be absolute garbage crap that can't be recycled. And yet I have a neighbor who never puts out his recycle bin or her recycle bin. I don't know what they are. It's a couple. I don't know which one puts the bins out, to be honest with you. And then once a week, this big recycling truck, this big garbage truck, I'm sorry, you're not supposed to call it a garbage truck, this big sanitation truck comes by for the garbage, the trash. And then in another barrel, there's the recycling stuff. And they never put out any recycling. And I feel like going over them and poking them hard. They just don't do it. And it bothers me. I don't wish for their death or anything like that, just for them to be hurt catastrophically. No, I don't wish that at all on anybody. I just, maybe just a pinprick or something, or maybe, again, maybe just a minor little poke in the ass. Get them to recycle. Hey, I'll poke them. I'll poke them on Facebook about recycling. How about that? How about that? Anyway, that's coming up a little bit later in the program. But right now, something different. I'm going to hold up a puppy in front of your face.
Aww.
That'll get you every single time. Look at the little cute puppy dog.
Aww.
It's in a pup tent.
Aww.
Look at the little dog.
Aww.
Now it's taking a little crap on the floor.
Aww.
I have to get some toilet paper and get the crap off the floor.
Aww.
Look, it's leaving a little mark on my wonderful floor, my rug.
Aww.
It's ruining my rug.
Aww.
Look, there's a tiny little splatter of pee underneath.
Aww.
And it's not coming up out of the carpet.
Aww.
It's gotten into the backing of the carpet and I have to replace the carpet.
Aww.
And now it's seeped onto the floor and I have to replace the hardwood floor and the subflooring. Just because of my little puppy dog. Isn't that cute? Oh boy. Alright, fine. That's enough. That's enough. Anyway, yesterday do I have a story for you? I'm going to ask you something. Do I have a story? I have a story for you.
Okay, get comfortable, everybody. It's time for one of Ron's funny stories.
All right. We get the idea. There's a funny story coming up. And funny is all in the eyes of the beholder. It could be funny. It may not be funny. You'll be the judge of that, quite obviously. All right. Yesterday, I had an incident. I was called quite remarkably and in quite officially, I was called to jury duty. stop with the stupid song. All right. I got an official postcard in the mail about 3 months ago saying, Ron, they call me Ron, you are officially subpoenaed to appear in court for jury duty. If I fail to show up, it's a $2,000 fine or perhaps imprisonment. I believe those are the same penalties as murder. It was freaking official. I've been poked to perform jury duty. And it says in the little letter, the little postcard letter, that this is a privilege of mine. That for me to have to go to court is a privilege. It's my civic duty. You can't be alive in this country and not perform a civic duty when requested by the government. I thought it was a free society, but apparently not completely free. And two, it's my privilege. That's something that I supposedly want to do. So, want to do sounds like a fictional. That's Xanadu. Sorry, getting confused. So for months, I'm saying to myself, how am I going to get out of this thing? I hate going to places where I'm confined. I don't like when the government makes me do something. I pay taxes, sure, because that's the setup. And we have to help the people that can't take care of themselves. And we have to pay for the roads, and we have to pay for all kinds of things that we enjoy in this country, the services which are provided to us, which we think are for free, but they're not. We pay taxes for that. Just like in your town, if you own a home, you pay property taxes. It's not free. You have to pay for the services that are rendered by the town or by the government. That's something people don't think about, but that's how that works. I pay those little suckers. I do, because I use those services. Yeah, I use the roads. I put my car on the pavement, and so, yeah, I'm using the roads. Yeah, so I get that. But sometimes the government sends me a little card in the mail saying, I'm going to snatch you from your daily life because I can, and I'm going to threaten you with penalties and imprisonment if you don't show up. Oh, that's not intimidating at all. Oh, that's just fine with me. I say sarcastically. So I start going on the internet web of traffic and I try to find ways to get out of jury duty. It's not so much that I don't want to do it. It's I'll be damned if I'm going to be told that I have to do it. It's more that. I find that there are ways to do it, but I'm figuring that the judges and the jury system probably look this up too, so that probably isn't going to work. So I swallow my pride, and I'm on my way to jury duty yesterday. And I don't know if I'm going to be there for 2 hours or 2 days or 2 weeks. I have no idea. If I get caught up in some type of a trial where I'm a juror, I could be there for days and days and days, sequestered, having to sit in a chair and listen to legal minutia. Minutia sounds like an old boys band, doesn't it? Sounds like an a cappella group. And now, here's minutia. Oh, listen to the details that you don't care about. Boom, 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 boom. On the way to the courthouse, the day is going bad already. Yesterday, I pull up to this parking garage, which is 2 blocks from the courthouse. First of all, now I'm pissed that I have to pay a parking fee to go to court, and court isn't even paying for my parking. Well, this is a privilege, you say. This is something, it's my civic duty. They thank me so much for my civic duty, but they won't pay my parking. That's out of my pocket. Oh, I see. Government's not doing too well. Can't pay for the juror's parking, huh? It's not like the jurors said, hey, I want to park in this garage. I'm parking in the garage because you made me come by penalty of death. And yet you won't pay for my parking? So this is already pissing me off. So I find a space. This is one of these self-parking, pay-at-this-machine kind of thing ahead of time. You get this little receipt sticker and you put it on the dashboard of your car, and then they know that you paid for the parking space. And I go to the machine, and there's like 20 people in line to pay for this. This machine apparently is not working very well. It's very sluggish. Sometimes it doesn't work. And I'm saying to myself, oh my God, if I don't get to the courthouse by 8:30, I'll be imprisoned and I'll be eating a dog slop, which by the way isn't so bad for dogs, but for humans, not so tasty. I'll be imprisoned and I don't look good in blue. Actually, I do look good in blue. It's orange that I don't look good in. Blue and orange, you're screwed. If you don't look good in blue or orange, you're totally screwed. So anyway, so I finally get to the front of the line. I pay this thing, and I'm cursing. I'm like, oh, this day is not starting well. And I walk to the courthouse. Now, the courthouse is very intimidating because there's police and court officers and people with guns, and they don't smile very much. If you notice people with guns, they don't smile much. They know they have a gun, and they figure, I don't have to smile. This is why I don't smile at all. Because I don't even have a gun, but I'm making believe that I do. So I get into, and now there's a line just to get into the courthouse because you have to go through a security point, like I'm taking a flight to Syria or something. So I'm in line. I get to the front of the line, and the security guard, all official, says, take everything out of your pocket, put it in this pan here, and remove your belt. I said, well, I'm going to remove my belt? Why? Why am I removing my belt? What, do people actually smuggle things into a courthouse in their belt? I understand on an airplane, maybe for my safety. Why are you checking my belt? So I have to take my belt off, and whenever I do, guess what happens? My pants fall down. Well, they didn't fall down, but they started to, and I'm fumbling like some kind of a pervert that doesn't know their pants size. I take the belt off. I put it in a little pan. The pan goes through this little X-ray machine, and apparently my belt is very healthy. No tumors. And I go through, and then everything's out of my pocket, and then I'm going through this arch that apparently will beep if I have a nuclear weapon on me. So I go through just fine. Now I'm putting everything back in my pants, my cell phone, my keys, all that kind of stuff, my agita pills. Now I'm standing there in front of all these women and all these people in public, putting my belt on and adjusting my crotch. My boys have to figure out which side of the pants they're going to be on at this point. It's an opportunity to have them shift and make another decision. I go up to the third floor of this very attractive courthouse, which is good. And there is the jury room, and there's a big sign on the door that says jury room. And I walk in. I have to give them a form that I previously filled out. And one of the questions on the form says, is there any reason why you cannot be an objective juror? And I said to myself, how can I fit this answer onto the form? Because, man, I got something to say. And I do. I'm writing in the smallest letters possible to get all my thoughts in on that line. Do you feel that you can be impartial in making a decision? And I checked the box that says no. And if there was a box with a capital N and a capital O, I checked that one. And that's the start of my essay question. And I write down the following. I write down, I don't trust attorneys. Attorneys are manipulators of the truth. The system is unfair. Those that can't afford an excellent attorney lose their cases. People with a lot of money settle out of court. People who are poor can't settle because they don't have the money to settle with. I go on and on. This thing's an essay. I cannot help it, but I've been tainted by the system. As a talk show host, I have interviewed many attorneys. I found them all to be deceitful. Now, that's not entirely true. I have met attorneys that are just fine, wonderful people, but for the most part, not so much. And I live in Massachusetts, which is very close to Rhode Island, which is the ambulance chaser capital of the world. There are more television commercials for attorneys in Rhode Island than there probably are anywhere on the planet. And they're all disgusting. I write this all down on this little piece of paper. And I submit it to the guy sitting behind a desk, the bailiff or whatever the hell you call these people. Who don't smile, by the way. They're trained not to smile. These are the people that were rejected by the motor vehicle department because they smiled more than them. Both of them don't smile. Both those places. Anything for the government, they don't smile. Any government person on a government payroll standing behind the counter will never smile. They're not supposed to. They can't be friendly. They can't be nice. They can't be respectful. They are trained to be assholes. I'm sorry, but apparently that's the case. So I give the form to the guy, and he says, sit down, please. And I do. And I'm sitting there, and I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Judges usually are former attorneys. As a matter of fact, they always are. This is not going to be pretty. Now, I have had jury duty before. They show you a little video at this point. It's 20 minutes long. It makes you feel like this is a privilege. This is something that you want to do. They have people in the video, former jurors, who say, this was the greatest experience of my life. This made me a very empowered, wonderful person. I really feel like I've participated. I would do it again in a second. This has been the most wonderful experience ever. And I'm saying to myself, yeah, you interviewed maybe 5 people that feel this way. Try interviewing the other 23 million and hear what they have to say. You ruined my life. You put me in a horrible situation. I couldn't make any money today. You confined me by penalty of death, by imprisonment, by fines. You ruined my life. They don't show those people. In the video that all there's about, by the way, there's about like 34 people in the room with me. And I've been to jury duty before, and most every time they let you go pretty soon. I don't know why, but they do. It's a game they play. They pull you in there by subpoena, And then they get you there and you sit around for a while and then they tell you to go home, and that's how they play with your mind. That's how they make you scared of the government. So much in this video. By the way, I'm a grumpy, skeptical person. That's the part that I play here on this radio show. So I'm watching a video, and the person in the video says, now technically we can call you every 3 years, but we don't, because this is all done by a lottery system. And for example, if you're called every 3 years a couple of times, it's just like a roulette wheel. You just happen to be lucky. And I'm saying to myself, okay, that's a bunch of bullshit, because I have, for every 3 years, I've been called to jury duty for the past, I would say, 15 years. I've been called every 3 years. That is not a lottery system. That is not simply a coincidence. That is, they're doing it on, they're poking me on purpose. They're legally poking me. Don't give me this, it's a lottery. It's like, you know, if you happen to be called twice in a row, that's amazing. Yeah, bullcrap. It happens to me every 3 years, which is why I'm a little bit angry about this whole thing. After the video is over, we sit there for about another hour. And then the judge comes in, a judge, and he says, here's your deal. Here's your deal. A nice guy, by the way. Judge is a nice guy. Gray hair, very, very fatherly, very, very nice. You know, there are judges and there are judges. This one was the good people, the good witches. He says, here's the deal. We have a district court case. That's they're talking right now. And then there's four civil cases. And I'm saying to myself, and I'm looking around the room, there's only 34 people in the jury pool, and I'm saying to myself, holy crap, I'm going to be here all day, and this is awful. This is going to be bad. This is going to be bad. And the judge says, you know, thank you for your cervix, because if it wasn't for you sitting in this jury room, it's an intimidation for these people who are in the courtrooms down the hall, most of the time they settle the cases before the trial because they don't want to go through the trial. They know that the jury's here and we're ready to go. So a lot of them settle. And I'm thinking, yeah, a lot of them, like five cases and they're all going to settle. I don't think so. I think I'm screwed. We sit there for 1 hour, for 2 hours, for 3 hours, not a word from anybody, just sitting there bored off our ass. And the worst thing about it, there's a TV in the room, and on the TV is Kelly and Ryan, Kelly Ripa and Ryan Seacrest. I got to listen to their stupid, stupid banter for 20 minutes, and then guests that I've never heard of. I've got to listen to this show in my ear through the whole thing, which is enough to commit a crime. And then after that, I got to hear Kathy Lee and Yoda, or Loda, whatever her name is, Loda, banter back and forth like two inebriated females at a bar at 2 o'clock in the morning. And this is all in the background of my mind, and I'm starting to think, arrest me, put me in jail, just get me away from this, please. And going through my mind, oh, what am I going to say? How am I going to get out of this? I can't stand it. I hate being confined for a period of time. I would be a horrible inmate, horrible one. That, and everybody would have to listen to my podcasts out of jail, and they wouldn't like that at all. So, finally, after 3 hours, the judge comes back and he says, I'm sorry I didn't come in to keep you updated like I said I would. Sorry about that. Sorry for leaving 34 people in a room by themselves for 3 hours. I really apologize for that one. I didn't see that coming. Totally forgot about you. Thanks for your service. Thanks for serving your country. I totally forgot about you. How about that? He says, here's you want the good news and the bad news? And we go, oh, geez, here we go. He says, the good news is all the cases that I was referring to in the morning, they've all been settled. There will be no trials today. Okay, what's the bad news? The bad news is you have to go home. I think all of us sitting in the room felt like literally kissing this guy. I mean, like, thank you. I felt like I was paroled. I felt like I was just before a parole board and they said, okay, your charges are dropped, go home. Where do I gather my clothes and my belongings? I mean, oh my God, I'm free. It's very funny, but when you're confined in a place, even for 3 hours, where you can't leave, you cannot leave. When you get a taste of freedom, you really appreciate what it's about. Here's what should happen. It should be like the volunteer army. No drafting. This jury thing is like drafting people. It should be volunteer. Those people that love to sit on juries, that are good at it, have very, very open minds, aren't prejudgmental, are really good listeners, really want to seek the truth, really want to get involved, they should become professional jurors. And they don't pay them for it, but there's a large number of people that apparently, according to this video, love being jurors. Call on them. Get them into the courthouse. They love being there. And use them on juries. There's enough of them. Don't call on people that don't want to be there. How is that going to be beneficial to our jury system when you have people placed in a courtroom who don't want to be there? That doesn't work. Make it a volunteer jury system. Why can't you do what I tell you to do? My ideas make sense. Why do you do this? Do what I say. Volunteer jury system. Cut out this rest of this hauling people into a courthouse and making them sit there against their will and think they're going to be happy about being there. You're pissing them off. Anyway, I've talked too much. I doth protest too much. Anyway, did you enjoy that little funny story? I think even kids can understand what I'm talking about.
That was a really funny story, Ron. But then again, I'm in the third grade.
Poignant. My neighbor to listen to this. I'm going to interview right now a gentleman who's going to tell us about recycling. That's taking your old bicycle and using it again.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Joseph Picard joins us. He's chief economist and director of commodities at ISRI. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure being had. No, that didn't sound right. We're talking about the benefits of recycling. You know, in my mind, there are two kinds of people in this world, people that recycle and people that don't. They're actually two distinct personalities, I guess, people that care about the environment, people that don't. Now, I know that you've done surveys on this.
We have, yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people, when they think about recycling, they think about the ones who do recycle, and hopefully that's most people, they think about all the environmental benefits associated with recycling, whether it's the fact that we don't have to send that material to landfill, that we don't have to create new products to replace the old ones, that it cuts down on energy costs and therefore emissions, but the recycling industry is actually great for the economy, too, and that's why we had a survey conducted just to get a sense of how big an economic impact our industry has.
Have you been able to discern the percentage of people that actually do recycle?
I don't have the percentage of people that actually recycle, but I can tell you that in the United States, our scrap recycling industry processes over 130 million metric tons of material every year.
Oh, that's good.
That is good. And the economic benefit from our industry is over $116 billion annually, while at the same time we're employing over 530,000 people directly and indirectly.
Wow. Now, there was a time not long ago where everything had to be manufactured from scratch and that garbage was garbage. I know you hate that term, but I mean, the mere fact is that a lot of the things that we throw out have a new life. They're regenerated and they're born again, so to speak.
That's absolutely right. You know, from ISRI's perspective, and ISRI is the trade association that represents the for-profit recycling industry.
Yep. We
see scrap as not being waste, but as being a really valuable raw commodity input. If you think about metals, for example, like copper and aluminum, they can be recycled virtually an infinite number of times.
Now, a part of the economic impact is that jobs are created from recycling?
Absolutely. Yep. So just in terms of direct jobs, that's people who are directly employed by the scrap recycling industry in the United States, that's over 155,000 people. Just in the state of Massachusetts, we have approximately 10,000 people who are employed by the scrap recycling industry.
Wow. Okay. So there was a time, I mean, I remember not long ago where I put out one barrel in front of my house. I know that's very archaic, but and then it would be brought to a recycling center or a distribution center, and they would sift through it and divide it. So what we're doing now is more efficient, I assume, because we're doing a lot of the dividing for them.
We do. To the extent that consumers can sort their material at the household, that certainly makes the recycler's job that much more easy. But it's also important to keep in mind that there are a couple different parts to the recycling industry. One is what most people think of, and that's curbside collection.
Yes.
But there's also a very active and vibrant scrap recycling industry that is separate from the municipal system that processes most of the material in this country. If you think about all the old sort of cars and appliances and end-of-life products like that, those aren't going to the municipal system. Those are being processed by scrap processors.
Wow. Yeah, we don't see a lot of that, I guess, because we're not handling it like we do in our homes. Is this country very good at recycling? Are there other countries that are as good? Is this are we the leaders in this?
I think we do an excellent job, but you know, as with anything, there's always room for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
It varies a little bit by commodity in terms of how effective we are in recycling. For example, of all the paper that's generated in this country the United States, we recycle about 67% of that, which is a pretty high recycling rate, especially when you keep in mind that paper does degrade over time.
Uh-huh.
For other commodities, some of the recycling rates are a little bit lower, but I think the United States is one of the leaders in the recycling space for sure.
Does it have an impact on the environment indeed?
It certainly does. You know, there are three big ways that recycling sort of impacts the environment. One is that it diverts material that otherwise would be sent to the landfill, you know, and that landfill space can be used for more productive means, for sure. The second big thing is that it doesn't require us to mine or drill for new material because we can just recycle the old material and use that in its place. And then the third big thing is the energy savings associated with recycling. If you look at aluminum production, for example, using recycled aluminum instead of primary material saves about 90% of the energy costs associated with making aluminum because it's so energy intensive.
Wow.
And that translates into less emissions that are being sent into the environment and a cleaner environment for all of us.
It's funny, when this whole recycling thing began, because I'm like 170 years old, when this whole recycling thing began, I always thought that when you recycle materials that they're going to look different. They're going, it's from old stuff, so the stuff's going to be tarnished or discolored. And then as I became educated about it, I realized, well, that was pretty stupid. But, I mean, and that wasn't that long ago, to be honest with you.
Well, and I think that's a common misperception, yeah. You know, that the quality of the recycled material might not be as high, but it's actually not true. It's manufacturers really look for recycled material as their preferred raw material input, to be honest. Steel production in the United States, about two-thirds of that is produced from scrap. Because it's a lower cost alternative raw material input, and because of the energy savings we just talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I know we're talking about more than you know putting out trash once a week, but personally, I think that I'm a better person because I do this, and there's a lot. My recycle bin is filled to the brim. My trash bin is hardly touched at all. And I don't know, that makes me feel good. Maybe that's just me. I got a neighbor across the street who puts out one barrel, and it's not the recycled one, and I think I want to kick his ass, but that's not, you know, proper.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I would certainly encourage everyone to recycle. And, you know, like I say, it's not just the environmental benefits, which does make, you know, everyone feel good about recycling, but also the economic benefits, too. Yes. And I just wanted to say, for anyone who wanted to learn more about the economic benefits of recycling, they can go to www.isri.org/economy.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I'll spell that just so everybody knows. It's ISRI.org. And it's actually a fascinating study, and the information is well worth looking at. Thank you so much for your time today, Joseph.
Thanks so much.
You take care.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Well, I hope you found that entertaining in some manner and informative. My neighbors, did you listen? I'm out of time for today, but I'll be back again tomorrow. We're going to talk about O.J. Simpson and his, his parole hearing. I guess more of the court theme, I suppose. I'm carrying it over. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.